I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'll speak to people who remind us to take better care of ourselves. And what better way to take care of ourselves than to understand more about our bodies? This series, I've teamed up with Fitbit. Fitbit allows you to get to know yourself better and understand your health with insights that are unique to you. As I always say, knowledge is power, and Fitbit provides data about your health and well-being to help empower and support you in leading a balanced and healthy lifestyle. I'm so happy to have Fitbit on board, as my Fitbit helps keep me focused and on track with my goals and training. Being partnered with Fitbit is inspiring, as they're encouraging everyone to make positive changes, and I hope this podcast does too. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Nadia Devon. Nadia was 29 when she was diagnosed with cancer. She was in the prime of her life and faced surgeries and intensive treatment. She was advised to do IVF to freeze embryos. She was determined to get back to full health and go on to have a family with her husband, George. They went ahead with the IVF and decided to use a surrogate in the US. Today, she tells us about the amazing experience and how she got her dream family. You can follow her journey on 2psnotmypod.ie. Nadia, thank you so much for joining me on the Good Glow podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted.
So we were put in touch through your cousin and my friend, and she came up to me in work one day and she said, would you ever consider talking about IVF and surrogacy on your podcast? And I said, yeah, actually, that's what I want to do next season. And she said, well, you should hear my cousin's story. So anyway, she put us in touch and we instantly hit it off. Our babies were born on the same day, which is so incredible. And you're here to tell us your story, which is absolutely fascinating. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I'm delighted.
So, okay, let's start. So unexpectedly, you were diagnosed with cancer, 29 years of age, like smack bang in the middle of, I suppose, your prime. Like myself, you just never expect this to happen.
It's the last thing on my mind. Yeah, like I was 29. I was good social life, full-time job. I was manager of a retail store, kind of long hours. I was just a normal 29-year-old. And I just started feeling really unwell. The main thing was I was really cold. I was freezing cold. Like in the middle of summer, I was cycling in and out to work and I get home and I just couldn't warm up. It was really, really strange. I get into work then in the mornings. I go off to the supermarket and I buy a fleece blanket and a hot water bottle, and I'd be sitting in the office like perishing with the cold. And I just couldn't shake it. It was just the weirdest thing. It was a lovely summer. It was really warm and everyone was going around in their T-shirts and I was there with my big jacket going, and oh my God, it's really cold. And I just thought, oh, look, you're just a cold person. It was odd. So I never had any kind of, I had that symptom, and then I was always kind of feeling kind of unwell in myself, and I knew I wasn't 100%. So I kept going to the doctor, you know, but at that age, you know, you kind of, are you looking after yourself okay? Take some vitamins. You could be a bit anemic. You know, there's a few things that they kind of go through before they go, right, this one is kind of, she probably is a little bit unwell. So I was sent then. I went back and I just pled. I left work one day at lunchtime. And I remember going over to the doctor saying, I have no appointment, but you just have to see me. You have to take me seriously. Like, there's something wrong. So in fairness, they were brilliant. They brought me straight in, and another doctor came in and he said, yeah, you should probably go to the matter for a colonoscopy. And I was like, why? Like, I'm just cold and I just don't feel well. And he said, yeah, he just had this, you know, he obviously had done an examination. I don't know what he had seen or found or whatever. So I went up to the matter, and within less than a week, I was diagnosed with bowel cancer. So like it was such a blow. I remember going home one day, and it was my boyfriend, my husband now, and we got into the car and he said, are you okay? And I said, no, I feel really bad. And he said, like, what is it? Do you want to go home for a sleep? Do you need vitamins? You know, the normal things. And I said, no. I said, whatever it is, George, it's getting worse, because it's constantly, every day, it's something. I'm constantly feeling something else.
And he was, it's like your body is screaming at you, and you know deep down in your gut something. But did you expect it to be that?
No. And I was so naive about it. Do you know, I went for colonoscopy, and the doctor that did it in the matter private came out to me afterwards and said, you know, we've taken a couple of biopsies. And I was like, oh, of what? I was so like stupid. And now when you look back on it, you kind of think, oh, that was a big red flag. And he said, look, don't worry too much about it. You might need a surgery. And I was like, right. And of course I started crying getting into the hospital, saying, I've never had a surgery before, I've never been in hospital, you know. Little did I know that was at least my worries, one little surgery that he was kind of saying, oh, might be it. And so a couple of days later I had an appointment with him again, and I went back up, and he and it was strange, he left everybody else in before me. Of course I was getting annoyed in the waiting room, going like, I'm next, like why can't he see me, you know, like I've been waiting here long enough. But he was waiting because he wanted to spend time with me, you know, to go through everything and make sure that I was okay. And he just wanted to kind of clear the rest of the patients out, which, you know, was fair enough. So he sat us down, myself, my boyfriend went, George, my husband went in. He sat me down and he said, yeah, I have bad news. And I was like, right, okay, what is it? And he said, so there's a tumour. And I said, okay, still not knowing, still really naive, didn't link tumour, cancer. Mm-hmm. Honestly, like I was not in that mindset at all. And I said, all right, you just remove that. And he said, yeah. And he started showing me the chart of where it was and explaining things, and you might need a bit of chemo. And I said, hold on, does that mean I have cancer? And he said, yeah. And I just sat there like, no. Really? Are you sure you're the right patient? Look again, do you know? Mm-hmm. And he said, no, I'm sure, Nadia. You know, we've had a meeting about you, and we want to bring you in for a few more scans and a few more tests to see the extent of it. And I said, what? There could be more? Like, did you not look? And he said, I can't look everywhere with the test I did. It's just, you know, what we can do at the time. So, like, this was about a couple of days before I was 30, for my 30th birthday. And of course, all I was worried about was, you know, I was kind of, I probably didn't take it as seriously that first day as I should have. I was like, we'll still be able to go out for a meal, like for my 30th. Like, you know, I was still kind of in that like stupidity thinking.
It's so weird because I was the same. I was like, oh, but I'll be able to go back to work in 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we don't think you're understanding that.
You now have to
stop your life and survive.
Yeah. So they brought me back in, I think a day or two later, and into the matter private again, and they did all the tests and all the scans.
And how did you feel during that time?
Oh, I was so scared going in. I really was. I was scared going into hospital, like, because I was waiting. I remember the phone call came and I was at home, my mum and dad, and they said, yeah, come up, we have a bed. And I said, oh God, like I have to go up and stay there. Like I'd been away from my parents, obviously. I was 29, 30, but I'd never been in hospital. I'd never been anywhere on my own, do you know? And I was going, okay. And just grabbed the bag, whatever, and I went up. And they said, right, you're here, you're going to have all the tests tomorrow. And I said, grand. And I just felt scared. I didn't know what was in front of me. And I didn't know what they were going to find. I didn't know what the tests were. I didn't know what a CT scan was, what an MRI. All these blood tests were being done, different questionnaires, lifestyle questionnaires, all this. And it was just nurses coming at me, left, right and centre. And that continued for months on end. So when they did that first initial round of tests, they found that there was a second tumour. And this was the one further up that was causing me the problems, and this was quite a large tumour. So the one that he had seen on the colonoscopy wasn't. I remember that my surgeon, she is amazing, she definitely saved my life, Miss Brannigan in the matter. She came into me one day and she said, I just think this one that he found is kind of a red herring. It doesn't explain your symptoms, it doesn't explain anything to me, you know, we have to look further. So she did a load of different, she had a couple of operations where like she actually went in and looked to make sure there was nothing else there. And thank God it was only contained to my bowel. But of course that meant I started off 3 months of chemotherapy and faced a massive operation after that.
And how did you find the chemo itself?
I really looked after myself. I really did. I put myself number one. If there was something going on that, say, involved a load of kids, I wasn't going to put myself at risk. I had in my head, I have to get this chemo done. Nothing is stopping me. You know, it wasn't a thing of, oh, I'm grand and I'll go off out and I'll be this and that. I was really, really mindful of being able for it, you know, getting my bloods right that day and then getting the treatment that I needed. So I was very sick.
And were you like that before you got sick in terms of putting yourself first?
Oh, no, no, I wouldn't be. No, I'd be like, no, I'm grand, I'm fine. You know, is everything else okay? And no, I'll stay in a couple of hours and work. And no, I'll do that extra day. And oh, you take your day off now if you're not feeling well, I'll come in. No, I was really, I wouldn't have been like that at all. I definitely wouldn't have minded myself as much as I should have in my 20s.
So you did the chemo, you had your operation, and then a couple of months later, they found that the cancer wasn't completely gone.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, did you harvest?
So before, so I was diagnosed, mm-hmm. and then I had all those tests done. And then they said to get to the tumour that they needed to get, they needed to actually give me a temporary stoma, so a temporary colostomy bag. So I had to have that operation. So that meant that I couldn't start chemo for 6 weeks after the operation. So they had to leave me heal and leave it all work and all that kind of thing. So when I was in the hospital one night, a doctor, I remember his name and everything, he was really, really good to me. He came in just for a chat and he said, "No, how are you feeling and how are you and do you need anything?" And, you know, he'd seen all my family come in and out. He knew I was fine, but he just wanted to have a chat. And he said, "Did you ever think of your fertility or, you know, because this, your treatment might affect it." And I said, "What do you mean?" You know, still totally naive and what was about to happen to me with treatment and how it was going to affect me. And I said, "No." I said, "I don't need to worry about that like that. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Just, we'll get this done and we'll just move on." And he said, "No, no, really. I really think that I can make the appointment for you. You can go to the rotunda and you can speak to them there and see what they can do before anything happens. And you have this 6 week gap. Let's just go and see what you can do." So, of course, I started crying, going, "I didn't realise this was going to happen and, you know, it's not fair." And, you know, I did feel sorry for myself at those first couple of days. So he made the appointment and I went over with George to the rotunda and they put us through our paces, I have to say. They were making sure that we knew what we were in for and what it meant of us, you know, harvesting embryos and how big of a deal this was. And it wasn't just, "Oh, sure, yeah, no problem, we'll do this for you, it's grand." You know, he made sure that we knew what we were talking about and what it was involved and everything. But sure, we were 100% on board. We knew, yeah, we have to do this.
Because the same thing happened to me. They said there was an 80% chance that my fertility would survive the chemo, but yeah, then there's this 20% yeah, chance. So they said, if you can go, I was the same. I was lucky enough to have a 6 week window.
Yeah.
And they said, if you can go to Beacon Fertility and harvest your embryos.
Yeah.
So you go to the appointment and then they explain to you that you're better off saving embryos than eggs.
Yeah.
So the eggs is just you, and then the embryo is after the egg fertilizes with the sperm. Yeah. So it's like two people come together.
Yeah.
But you were not married.
No.
Had a boyfriend. So did you have to go home and go, like, if things got very serious for you guys?
It got very serious very quick.
And how long were you together at this point?
We were together, so we started seeing each other, but when I met George, he had booked to go to Australia. He was going to Australia for a year.
Right.
So we had kind of just dated, just, you know. And I knew he was going, and because I was totally heartbroken when he went. But I knew there was something there. I knew there was something serious there. So we kept in touch. I ended up going out to Australia for a month and we visited him and stayed with him for a while. And then when I came home, he came home 2 months later.
Okay.
You know, I tell him that he was heartbroken without me there and he had to follow me home. He says I followed him out there. You know, who do you believe?
So you go to the consultant, you get all the information, and then you go home with George and you discuss, are we going to freeze eggs or embryos?
We actually just decided in the office, no.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because the doctor was so, this is percentage of success for an egg and this is percentage of success for an embryo. And I knew straight away, oh, yeah, embryos, yeah. And George was exactly the same. He said, no, we don't even have to think about it. No, we know what track we're on. Let's do this.
When Amazing. Can
we? Yeah. There was no delay. And it wasn't a panic kind of a situation. It was just, we knew. You know, we were fully cemented into our relationship. You know, obviously, at this, when I was diagnosed, I said to George, you know, I don't expect you to hang around. I'm completely understand if you want to go. And he just stopped me in my tracks and was like, no, don't even talk with Alec ever again. That's not what I'm about. You know, I'm here for better or worse. It was just, there was no, there was never really a big discussion. Mm-hmm. It was just, we are in this, you know. We're in together, you know, the family and me, and I'm not going anywhere.
When I was doing the IVF journey just before my chemo started, I was the same. Like, Jamie made the appointment for me. Like you said, your doctor offered to make it for you, because you can't think. You're dealing with the cancer diagnosis, trying to get your head around this.
Yeah.
Like, if it wasn't for Jamie, I wouldn't have done the IVF, because it was too much for me to handle.
And it is a lot. And I think if you look back on it now, you go, how did I do that? How did I actually do? Like, a round of IVF is hard, regardless of your health. You know, for a normal person walking in off the street, it's a hard thing to do, you know. And it's harder when you're sick, you know, when you're not feeling well and you're going up and down. Like, I was going up and down the bus every day at one stage, you know, your daily injections and your daily scans. And I was absolutely wrecked. But I was this far in, I just had to keep going.
Keep going.
You're in survival mode.
My colleagues bought me this advent calendar, because I was doing my IVF. I did it in November, but I must have started the advent calendar early. So I would line up like my three injections every night. And then afterwards, it was a beauty one. It was like rituals or something. Then I'd open it and I'd get like a lovely shower gel or something.
That's nice.
How did you find the injections?
I didn't do them. My dad did them for me.
Did he?
Yeah, and no problem. I was really, I'd never given myself an injection before. And I was saying, who's going to give me the injections? George would have done them, but I think he was a bit more, just do it, you know, just stick it in, you're fine. And I was like, no, I can't. And I said to my dad, you know, my mom actually said to my dad, your dad will do them. You know, mommy's, your dad will do that for you, no problem, that'll be grand. And then I come home with this big, like, bag, this, like, freezer bag and, you know, the cool bag and the sharps container. And I said, yes, so dad, you're going to give me these injections. Yeah, no problem. Didn't faze him. And my dad's a great man, no problem whatsoever. Straight in, no problem.
It's amazing that support you get, like, the whole family rallies together. Yeah. Like, how were your mum and dad?
Oh, I was heartbroken for them. I really was. You know, I remember I rang her on the way home. I rang my mum. We'd be very close as a family. Do you know, I have a brother and a sister, and my mum and dad, obviously. And we'd be all very close. And I just didn't want to ring home and say, you know, I was diagnosed. Or I was just heartbroken to have to tell people, this is what's wrong. And I just wanted them to say, oh, it's just a blip, and we just get rid of it and that's it. And I could go back to normal. But my mum and dad and my sister and my brother were amazing, absolutely amazing. Such a support. My mum would do anything for anyone, and my dad. Like, my mum would stand over, you know, like a pot of a soup for like 24 hours if I could just have one teaspoon. Do you know, if it meant she'd be making me juices every morning. She'd be making sure that anything I wanted, and I mean anything, you know, what do you feel like was her best line. Like, what do you feel like having? And I don't know, like maybe a chicken nugget. I'll be back in a minute. And next thing, chicken nuggets or whatever it was.
And did you feel compassion from the doctors and nurses?
Yeah, they're amazing. They really were. Like, I really think, you know, of course you can come across some doctors and nurses that, you know, their work to their bone, you know. But I think that it's really important, and I think they do that in the majority of the cases. They kind of check themselves before they come in, going, I'm going into this really unwell girl or boy or whatever it is, I'm going to show a bit of compassion. You know, they're amazing at their jobs. They really are. They were very, very kind to us, and they were very, very good. You know, the nurses that were there were doing the blood tests, and obviously George had to get tested and everything else. Absolutely amazing to us. Yeah, amazing.
So the day of the egg retrieval, how did you feel physically that day?
I knew I was starting chemo the next week. Yeah. So I was like, just get this done. It was another thing off the list. It was like, get this done. I wasn't in the moment as a normal person would be in, saying, I'm going to get egg retrieval and then hopefully they fertilise and then we'll hopefully go for a transfer. I was saying, get them frozen and let me get better, and then I'll come back to them. So physically that day I was tired, you know, it takes ahead of you. I was tired, my arms were black and blue from all the injections, my stomach was black and blue, but it was a relief to get it done, and it was a relief that it was a success as well, you know. But I got a kidney infection or something the day after, so I really felt, that was my first kidney infection that I ever got, you know. I was never sick beforehand, and now it was, I had this and now I had this and now you have that and you have to get this done. But I felt it was just like something, like a job, like a weight was lifted, a job was done, and it was a success, and it was worth it. In, you know, that, like, they retrieved 17 eggs and then they fertilized 14 embryos, you know, like
massive success. Yeah, we got 15 embryos.
Wow.
But yeah, when you get that phone call, like, everything you're describing is exactly how I felt.
Yeah,
when you get that phone call, like,
yeah,
because you're so used to getting bad news,
yeah,
that in the middle of it all,
yeah,
there's this magical, amazing thing,
yeah,
that is going your way.
Yeah, yeah.
Which gives you such a boost.
It does. And like, the Rotunda wouldn't be too far away from the Mater. So I would used to get the bus up, and sometimes I would stay on the bus. This was like when I was going to hospital to get different checkups and everything else. I'd stay on the bus and I'd get off near the Rotunda, so I could walk past the Rotunda and have a little word with myself going up the street, going, "Now, I hope you're behaving yourselves in there. We're going to come back for you. We haven't left you on your own." I honestly did. And I think it kept me going. It was like, I'm going up to the Mater and it's like you're walking through the doors going, "Oh, what are they going to tell me? What's next?" But there's this really bright light, if you like, down the road, drawing you to them and saying, like, I was talking to them as, you know, the buns, or, you know, they're the cake mix or something like that, you know. And I actually thought of them as babies.
Same.
Which I know some people say you shouldn't do that, and but I did, because it kept me going. And it was a positive thing.
It's so amazing. I love,
yeah,
it,
yeah,
because I drive
totally
past the beacon,
like,
on my way home, and
yeah,
for a long time, like,
yeah,
it was the same place where I was getting my chemo,
right?
So
yeah,
I drive out and then I just look up because it says like Beacon Fertility,
yeah,
on the windows, and that's what I'd kind of focus,
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I'd feel like shit leaving
chemo.
You'd
feel like absolutely crap. You'd feel,
but
like,
then I'd go, but there, that's the future.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I think it is important, and you know, not everyone has that.
So, will we fast forward now to your wedding?
Yeah,
like how much after your treatment did your wedding come?
So, the first treatment was 2011, just after the IVF. Then I had a couple of weeks break. Then I had I had 11 and a half hour operation, and then I had recovery after that, another 3 months of chemo. Then I had 3 monthly, which turned into 6 monthly CT scans. So at the end of 2012, they found a reoccurrence. In this time, it was in the base of my spine and my sacrum bone. So that led to more treatment, radiotherapy, and another massive operation, which involved a hysterectomy this time, because they just weren't 100% happy that my uterus was involved, wasn't involved. And I talked out with Miss Brannigan, and she just said, I'll make the call when I'm in there, she said, and I'll just see what I think I should do. So I had given her the go ahead. I'd sign all the forms. If you need to do it, do it. You know, if it needs to be done, I don't want to be back here in a situation in a year or 2 years, because I decided, no, I want to hold on or whatever. I wanted to be better. I do want things to be better. So I came out of the operation and she said, first of all, like, you know, you're very groggy. And I said, did everything go okay? And she said, yeah. And I said, did you have to do the hysterectomy? And she just tapped me on the shoulder. She says, yeah, we did. And I said, grand, okay. So I remember my mum coming in to the NICU, you know, a couple of hours later, and I said, "Mom, they had to do the hysterectomy." And she said, "Yeah, I know. You're fine." So that was hard.
Yeah. It's hard to, like, see your mum heartbroken for you, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You just want to be like, "No, but it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. Everything's okay." But sometimes you just, you know, you have to, you know, have a hug and a cuddle and just cry it out. But So
then I went. How did you feel? Like, how did you feel?
I don't know. I kind of felt numb about it, if I'm honest. I was just like, oh, like, I was always thinking of the embryo was gone, but now I don't, why did I do that? And then this happened. So I was like, why was I allowed to do that? I don't mean like the hospital, I just mean in life. Why did that happen? And then I had to have a hysterectomy. This is unfair, you know? So I kind of put it to the back of my mind, and I was on the road to recovery as such. And I needed to get better. I needed to get back to normal. So, you know, I went through the next couple of months, scans, everything was fine. And I was like taking positives from this, going, there has to be something I can do. And all the time, I knew the embryos were there. We knew we wanted to have kids. You know, we love kids. And so it was 2014, because I was only finished my treatments and everything else. My last treatment and all that was 2013, after my big operation. So in 2014, we got engaged on Valentine's Day. Big surprise. Didn't see it coming at all. It was lovely. It was very, very romantic. And we got engaged in the Knockranny in Westport, and then we actually got married that October. So it was like,
wow,
we're engaged, and it was like, do you know what? What are you waiting around for? Do you know? We just planned everything, you know, mm-hmm. And it was lovely. And so we got married in 2014 in the bank holiday in October, and it was just the perfect day. It was amazing.
So you went to America on your honeymoon?
Yes. So we had planned loads of different things to do in the States, but on one of them, we had planned to go to visit surrogacy agencies. because a couple of months before we got married, we went back to the Rotunda and we said, you know, what are our options here? What are our real options here? What can we do and what can't we do? And they said, well, you can't do anything. And I said, nothing, you can't refer me somewhere or something? And she said, no, they used to be able to do surrogacy, but you can't, no clinics offer it anymore. And I was like, no, there has to be something. And she said, I'm sorry, should we give you counselling? They were very good. We can do some counselling with you, and we can do offer you support that way, but we can't refer you anywhere or do anything.
I said, like, what if you had a friend or a sister who would have carried for you? Is that an option?
It is an option, but under Irish law at the moment, the person that gives birth is deemed the mother. So, like, my sister did offer, and I just couldn't let somebody go through, you know, she had two small kids. I couldn't let someone go through that. I think mm-hmm. It was like, what if something happened to her because she was trying to give me a baby? Mm-hmm. You know, it was too much. And plus, the law wasn't on anyone's side at the moment. So if my sister had done it for me, she would be the legal guardian on my children's birth certs.
And forever and ever.
Forever. There was no applying to a court. There was nothing. There is so many cases in Ireland at the moment that has happened with sisters, with cousins, with friends, and they're stuck in limbo. And they want to bring in this new law in Ireland to govern surrogacy. And they say that they haven't actually said that they're going to change anything for people that have done it in the past. It's really unclear what they're proposing. But what they're also going to do is ban commercial surrogacy. So if you don't have a sister or a cousin or a friend, then you can't do anything. You can't use a surrogate. You know, because it's only for a case of if you had a sister mm-hmm. or something else, you know, so a family friend or whatever. But there's loads of cases that people don't have that mm-hmm. or don't want to put their friends or their family at risk to do it.
So how did you find out information then about surrogacy in America? Just through Google?
Through Google. Yeah, there was nothing else. There was no, I didn't know anybody. So we started looking it up online, and it kind of became what we did in the evenings, you know. Did you find any article? No, I didn't. What's this? And, you know, you find scary stories as well. You know, they're not all positive. But I did find, I came across an article, and it was a couple of years ago, and it was about a couple from Dublin, I think, and they had used this agency in Boston. And I had said, all right, okay, so Irish people do it. Okay, grand. So it's possible to do it in America and bring your baby home and you know, people are doing it. So we started looking up agencies, and we were in, we went to Miami, and there was an agency in Florida that we had been speaking to beforehand. So I just basically emailed them, and we Skyped, and we told them our situation. Yeah, we work with Irish couples, we work with English couples, we work with people from all over the world. This, it wasn't like, oh, you're from Ireland, oh, we've not, we don't know where that is, we don't know anyone from there. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh yeah, from Ireland, no problem, yeah, I know Paddy or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. It was totally normal. So we, as part of our honeymoon, we drove 4 hours to the agency, and we sat down, we spoke with them.
How did you feel that day? Like, hopeful?
Hopeful, really hopeful. Like, this was a fresh start. This was
a possibility.
A possibility. This may happen. You know, these people, they have all my medical files. I had got them all sent over. They know what we have embryo-wise. They know the grades of them. They know my medical history. This might be possible. Like, these people aren't saying no. They're letting us drive 4 hours and meeting us. It was really, really hopeful. And we got really nice information from them. And it, in the end, we didn't go with them. We came home and we just didn't. Sometimes just things don't click properly. So I started researching again, and I found a different agency in Boston, the one that was in the newspaper article that I originally had seen. So I contacted them and instantly clicked. They were so down to earth. They loved the Irish course. We were endless Skype calls with them. Yeah, nothing was a problem. Everything was fine. They recommended a clinic to do the transfer and for all this type of thing. So we were talking to them. And in the meanwhile, you're waiting to be matched with a surrogate. So we had said, OK, Grant. So they explained the whole process to us, and what was going to happen, and different parts of the stages and everything. So they said, if you sign with us, then you go on a list to wait to be matched with a surrogate.
And how do they match you?
They match, like, they will have endless conversations, and you'll tell them what you do, where you live, what type of person you are, what's your family connections, just about yourself. So on the other end, there's a surrogate applying to be a surrogate to the same agency, and they're telling them all about themselves. So then they have these big meetings every Wednesday, and they'll say, you know, I have this girl in Ireland, this couple in Ireland, Nadia and George, and they're into this, they're into that, and they have these embryos, they're looking for... So then the other side of the table is saying, yeah, well, we have a surrogate, and she sounds like she might match with them because they seem to be, you know, the same type of people, and they're very outgoing, or they're very quiet, or whatever it could be. And, you know, like... Typical questions like, you know, what kind of contact do you want during a surrogacy? You know, after a surrogacy, what do you expect from it? Type of thing. Like, some people don't want any contact afterwards or in between. They just want reports from an agency. Like, we were the total opposite. We were like FaceTiming in the consultancy room every day, you know, with Tiffany.
And what did you say for contact afterwards?
So we had originally, we had said, oh, we don't know. We don't know, would we want to keep in contact? We don't know. It was kind of an open thing that we left. We said, we're just not fully decided. So we were matched with one girl. We were sent a profile, her profile, so her pictures, a letter, stuff about her family, of she was married, picture of her kids. And then she was sent our profile. And so you get to read through each other's profiles, basically a CV. And I didn't like the first girl that was sent. I was like, I just feel she's too young. Her kids were really young. And I was going like, how can she balance all of this and then be a surrogate? And we had waited 8 or 9 months to be matched. And I said, I really don't want to wait any longer. But I don't want to go with someone to do this big, massive, major job, or go this unbelievably journey with, that I'm not comfortable. So we said no. We said we don't want to go any further with her. Like, I'm really sorry, but I just, she wasn't for us. So about 3 or 4 weeks later, we got another email, carrier match, subject, title, and I was like, ah, brilliant. So clicked, opened it all up again, and I just fell in love with the whole family just from pictures. And I said, yeah, I don't even need to read it. Like, she's...
You just knew.
I just knew. You know, you feel a connection with someone, or else you don't. And I had read her letters, and they were just really warm and open and honest. I'm really honest about, you know, I don't talk to my auntie, my uncle and different family members, like, or I do talk to people. You know, she wasn't trying to be someone that she wasn't.
Did she say why she wanted to be a surrogate?
So she has two kids of her own. Mm. And it was just, you see, in the States, this is a normal thing. You know, everybody will know someone that has been a surrogate or know somebody that was a surrogate or, you know, had involvement or something. So it's not a big deal there. It's like, oh, you do surrogacy, oh, very good, fair play, very good. Like, you know, it's not this big massive ordeal for even someone to go and apply to be a surrogate. But she just always felt that she had two kids, and the way she explained it was she didn't want any more, but she really is a kind, genuine person, and she just wanted to help. And even in her own life now, she's all about, you know, her local church and helping people. And she's one of a kind. She really is.
Like an angel.
Yeah, yeah. She was amazing. Like, and so then we read her profile, she read our profile. Of course, we had like lovely wedding photographs and everything, very well staged. So we both decided at the same time that we both wanted to Skype. So they set up a Skype call for you. Of course, it was around Christmas time, and I was like, you know, positioning the couch. The Christmas tree was just enough in the picture. And, you know, what will I wear? We were Skyping my sister going, what do you
tell me you didn't wear Christmas jumpers?
No, we didn't. Can you imagine? You should have just hung up straight away. No, we didn't. And like, you know, a little subtlety, like little sparkling lights over in the corner, trying to make yourself look, please be my surrogate. We love you already. Like, we spoke for about 2.5 hours. And as soon as you put down the phone, you're meant to like have 24 hours to think about it and to get back to the agency. And I just said to George, he said, we're obviously going with her. And I said, yeah. I said, are you okay with that? He was like, yes, obviously. Like, self and her husband were just, they're just like pals, you know, really, really good pals after 2.5 hours. And it was just match made in heaven from the start.
So what was the next step then? So you obviously agreed to it. So now you needed to get your embryos to America.
Yeah, which was like, it was hard. It was hard doing that. So we had 14 embryos, and I didn't want to put all my eggs in one basket, you know, and send them all on one ship or airplane to the States. And I was like, I really don't want to send them all. So we had spoken to the doctors in America that was going to, they're in Connecticut, that was going to be our clinic. And I said, he said, just send 8. Would you be happy with 8? And I said, yeah. And he said, let me, because anyway, they're all different grades. Mm-hmm. He said, let me have a look at the list and I'll pick the ones I want. Because obviously we want the ones that we think are going to be a success. So I said, fine. So they have to do an interclinic agreement between the agency in America and, say, the Rotunda here. So that took, I think it was 6 or 7 weeks. So basically then, courier, so we had to organise the courier. You have to apply for a licence, and you have to apply for a licence for them to leave the country. Mm-hmm. So that licence had to be applied for, I think it's the HRA, the Harry unit, or the Rotunda, it used to be called the Harry unit, had to apply for a licence for them to ship them. So we got that licence. Then the customs had to be told that they were going to be arriving in New York to expect them, and then a courier had to be there to collect them and drive them to Connecticut. So,
like, what sort of courier? We're not talking about a man on a bike.
You're talking about a man in a van with a flask.
Wow.
Yeah, but pretty much
like with loads of like letters and stuff in his car, or is he his job?
Their job is like, you know, organs and things like that. So
they're specialists.
Yeah, you don't
in
just
this.
Pop them in the post box, you know, and go put a stamp on it.
What sort of stamp do you want? Like an urgent one,
like a really, really important one, please. Yeah,
but
no.
Like, you're obviously nervous around this time.
I'm so nervous. Like, they're being disturbed. They're being taken out of the freezer in the Harry and the Rotunda, and they're being put into a flask. And this is all okay, grand. And then a guy's going to come in the door. I was imagining these things. A guy's going to come in the door and say, "Yeah, I have a collection for Nadia Nulty, and it's going to be sent to." And I'm going, "Wow, this is actually happening." So, you know, flight radar. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I got the flight number they're going to be going on from Dublin Airport. So it was an Aer Lingus flight from Dublin Airport to JFK. And I tracked it. I stayed awake all night and I watched it move bit by bit by bit. I watched it. I didn't stop. And it was like I was putting 8 of my children on a plane on their own.
Oh,
and
God.
Going, I hope you can get there. I hope you get to America. Okay. Bye-bye now. You know.
So, like, what was, like, what's running through your mind when you're watching
flight? This is a massive trip for, like, such a fragile piece of tissue. For an embryo, like, you can't even, if it was on a dish, you can't even see it without a microscope. Like, I was going, this is a massive, massive trip. But then I was like, right, this has been done every day. This is these people's business. They know that this is a safe thing to do. This is fine. And I didn't care if it was insured. You can't insure that. Like, to somebody, it's like, oh, your insurance covers it. Yeah, well, I can't get those back.
Mm.
So there's no insurance in the world that's going to make that okay for me. And, you know, if anything happened, you know, people, there's different clinics saying, oh, but it's all insured. I was like, well, I can't make those eggs again. So I don't have those parts anymore. So it was just, it was nerve-wracking. It really was. And the relief when the flight just touched down. And it was like, I didn't even think at that stage, oh, what if they're not okay? What if that has done damage to them? I was like, well, just put it, they're there. That's the main thing. So then the courier picks them up from... It goes through customs. They know they're coming. All the paperwork is there. Everything is done. No problem. They're driven then by the courier up to the clinic. And then that night, I get this picture from the nurse that I've been dealing with a picture of the box, him holding the box from Cryoport on it, going, they're here.
Oh, my God.
We're going
to
mind
them.
And I was like, oh, my God. You know, a couple of friends were like, I didn't think they did that. I said, I don't think they do. I think they were just like... I had been speaking to them so much. It was like, let's just send her a picture. So this guy is down there. I still have it. This box.
And little, like, well, I suppose you did know, but like that picture just means so much
it
to
does,
you. And
yeah.
for someone to just take a second to think
to
of you.
That. Yeah, to do that and think of going, do you know what? This is going to calm things down in her mind. We actually have them. I'm standing here with a box. They're in the box. Everything's fine. Well, you know, in the flask, in the box. Not just in the box. No, but that was real. And I really felt that they went above and beyond doing that. And I often look at that picture going, look at that. Like, that's just amazing.
We'll get back to the conversation right away, but I just wanted to take a minute to give you an update on my Fitbit experience. I've been wearing the newly launched Fitbit Versa 2 over the last month, and not only does it have even more health and fitness tracking features, it has 5 days of battery life and a new always-on display. I monitor my sleep every night and get a sleep score every morning. This is actually making me go to bed earlier because I found out that I'm not getting as much sleep as I thought I was. Alexa has come to Fitbit so I can find out the weather forecast, set timers and reminders, all by talking into my wrist. Oh, and the best thing of all, Fitbit Pay. I can now leave my wallet at home and tap to pay for things from my wrist. Really handy when you want to grab a coffee after a workout. Fitbit is really helping me keep on top of my healthy habits. Now, back to our conversation.
That was March, I think, that they arrived. And then Tiffany had to be retested, you know, for up-to-date kind of medical files and that. So it was, we got a call the week before the transfer to say the transfer's next week. And we were like, okay, book flights. We hadn't met Tiffany up to this point. We had spoken to her on the phone. We'd spoken to her on Skype, we'd messaged, we'd known each other really well, but we'd never actually met in person. So we had the transfer date, which turned out to be my birthday. So I was like,
that's such a sign.
This is amazing. Like, oh, I'm all about signs. Yeah, like that. This is a sign. Like, this is going to happen. So we travelled over a couple of days earlier, and so did she, so we could meet each other and have a couple of days just to relax. So we all went to the clinic. We met the doctors. He explained what was going to happen. So our embryos were frozen on day 2 in Dublin. So normally in the States, they'll grow them out to day 5 and then freeze. So he wanted them to day 5 before he did a transfer. He didn't want to transfer on day 2. So the transfer was on a Thursday. So he started thawing them. So he's going to thaw them all out, grow them all out to day 2, transfer 1 and freeze the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the plan. And that was nothing else in my mind. That was going to happen. That's it. That was the plan. Grant. So the Monday came, he called. We're going to start thawing them out. I said, Grant, okay. I'll give you a ring tomorrow and let you know how they get on. I said, great. brilliant, no problem. So we were going around drinking coffee and, you know, getting to know each other, going to the aquarium. Got a phone call on Tuesday morning from him. Three didn't make the initial thaw. And I said, what? Like, I didn't even enter my mind that this was going to happen. So he said, yeah, this happens. It's fine. It's fine. You've got five left. We're good. And I said, okay, Grant, ring me tomorrow and let me know how the next day goes. He said, yeah, we'll be monitoring them each morning. And I said, fine, Grant. So he rang the next day, which is a Wednesday. And he said, another two have gone. So we were left with three. And I said, another two? We only have three? And he said, yeah, but we just need one. We're only transferring one. And I said, okay, Grant, okay. Because we all the time we were like, can you just transfer two? But they wouldn't. Mm. They just said, no, it's too high a risk. Tiffany had high blood pressure in her first pregnancy, which was down to stress and everything else. She was fine. Because there was that in her medical file, they wouldn't transfer the two. So they were only going to transfer one. So that was fine. So the day of my birthday, we got up, we went to the clinic. We had decided beforehand that myself and Tiffany would be there for the transfer together, and George would wait outside. So we all gowned up, we were all cloaked up, the whole lot, in the transfer room, which is probably the size of this room. The lights went down and there was nurses coming and going. And I said, God, Tiffany, I presume there's embryos here, you know? Like, I presume everything's good. We have embryos. This is very good. And she said, well, like, it's kind of a sick joke if they don't. Mm. And I said, well, they have to. They wouldn't let us in this far. So the doctor came in and he was, hi, Nadia, hi, Tiffany, you know, everything's good. And I said, Grant, okay, we have embryo, brilliant. Then I was thinking, God, I must ask him, is he going to refreeze the other two? Because I just thought, you know, we've three now, we're going to transfer one, then freeze two. And I said, sorry, doctor, just want to ask you, the other two, you're going to freeze them. And he said, oh, I'm really sorry. He said, we just have one left.
Oh, God.
And I was like, no. And he said, yeah, we just have the one. And I was going, like, going from 14 to sending over 8, now to 1. And I was like, oh, my God. It was heartbreaking. And I just looked at Tiffany and she was like, let's not focus on that right now. Let's just focus on the 1, send all our energy to the 1, and let's do this. We just need 1. You only need 1.
And what are the chances of her getting pregnant? Like, is there a 70% chance, or did you know? Or
yeah, I did. I can't remember the I think it was like a 65%, but it was growing. Maybe it was 40 or 50, but it grew in percentage if it was a day 5.
Okay.
You know, it was a higher percentage because it was a more mature embryo, and it was doing everything it should do. So I was like, I was devastated. I was like, oh my God, we only have one left. What if this doesn't work? And I knew what we had to do again to send more over if it didn't work. I was like, I just can't think like that. I just can't. So I was fine. I got myself together and I was fine. Okay, let's do this. Where's the screen? Let's focus on the screen. So then this nurse tapped me on the shoulder and said, sorry, Nadia, just want you to just check a few details with you. And I said, yeah, sure, no problem. So she said, just put out your hand. And I was like, okay. So she put these 7 little tiny straws in my hand. And she said, are they your name and date of birth? And I remember, I'm still doing it now, like I was doing it. It was like, yeah, they're all my name and date of birth. I said, sorry, what are they? And she went, that's what your embryos were in. They're the straws. And I was like, what?
Oh,
I was totally speechless. There was tears going down my face going, did you really need to do this now? Like, really? And I said, can I keep them? And she said, yeah, you can. I actually just held them in my hand. I was just like, this is really...
Oh my God, that's amazing.
It was amazing. And the size of them was unbelievable. They just all fit in the palm. 7 of them just fit in the palm of my hand. And I was totally speechless. I don't think actually until later on Tiffany realised, because we were having a conversation this side and Tiffany was this side. She didn't know what was kind of going on. And I was holding her hand and I was holding these embryos and I was just trying to hold the tears back because I was really sad about this in this hand, but I was really happy what was in this hand, you know? So I was just sitting there going, like, tears going into my mask and everything. And I was like, oh God, this is like... this is really sad, but this is really positive as well. There's a positive side to this. We have one embryo and it's gonna work. So, you know, the big screen is there and they show you the embryo and they show the transfer and it's over in seconds.
And is it an injection in?
So it goes into a catheter.
Okay.
And you can see the catheter going into her uterus on the screen. You know, like a normal ultrasound. Mm-hmm. So they're doing the ultrasound to know the position of the catheter and the needle goes in where it needs to go in. And then, so they're showing you all this and you can see it quite clearly. And then they show you, right, this is where it's entered and you won't see the embryo going in. But what they do is they puff air in afterwards to make sure the line is basically flushed. Mm. So you'll see bubbles. You know, that's kind of what you'll see. So I said, Grant, okay. So they were like, there's the embryo. So they had to hand it in from the embryologist into the doctor, into the little window. And he puts it on the desk, or he puts it on the tray and, you know, in the microscope. And he's like, yeah, there are all the cells and, you know, all the chemistry behind it. And he's like, this is what we wanted to see. And this is perfect. This is the perfect embryo. And I was like, finally, brilliant. This is really good. So I was focusing on the embryo going, wow, that's amazing. It looked massive on the screen. It filled the screen, but it was tiny. So he picks it up then with his little syringe. And I'm like, God, be careful. Don't drop it, whatever you do. And I was watching him going, this guy has some job. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. I was amazed by the process of it because I looked it up on different things of what would, but it was all people, you know, writing what was happening. And it's really hard to explain the magic that you can see happening before your eyes. It's unbelievable. So he goes over anyway. He says, just keep an eye on the screen. I don't blink. And I'm like, okay, I'm not blinking. And then puff of air, and you see the puff of air just kind of dissolve. And then he's like, right, that's it, done. And I was like, wow. Everything, the whole couple of years beforehand into that moment was just, I'll never ever forget that moment. It was amazing.
So did you have a gut feeling?
I hoped in my head, from all the heartbreak and all the hard work and everything, I said, this is going to work. And that was probably my gut feeling, that this can't fail. It just can't.
You're owed something.
I'm owed
good
something
to happen.
Give me something, like, you know, I deserve, I'm after working really hard to get these embryos created in the first instance. I worked really hard to get better, to use them. And now I've worked really hard to be in this moment. This has to work. So Tiffany went off for acupuncture, which she had actually beforehand and afterwards of the transfer. So it stimulates all the blood flow and everything to the uterus, and it creates a better environment, they say. I am a big believer in the acupuncture. And it relaxed her as well, she said. She felt more at ease. It wasn't just, right, get dressed, off you go. Mm-hmm. She could lie down, and it was just like she couldn't concentrate on that. So we went off for a couple of days afterwards. We hung around for a couple of days afterwards with her, and they had told her to you know, drink hot drinks and mind yourself and don't be overdoing it. But nothing, no bed rest, no legs up in the air type of thing, you know.
But are you kind of...
I'm really...
Are you looking at her, like,
yeah,
all the time?
I was, yeah, yeah. Like, we went out for a meal that night, like, for a tea that night. It was my birthday, so we went out for celebration of the transfer and my birthday, and the four of us were there. And I was like, God, there's a bit of a breeze here, is there? And George was like, there's not, stop, stop. And I said, no, there's a bit of a breeze, yeah, yeah. I think we'll get our coats on. Everyone, coats on now, please. And we were sitting at the table, like, having our dinner with coats on. Like, are you warming up? I think I'll swap with you. You know that Aldi ad with the barbecue?
Yeah.
You all have to move. I was like that. No, no, no. Oh, let's get your end again. Off we go now. You know, and you know, the waiter come over and, you know, do you want anything? Yeah, tea, please. Lots of tea. Anything hot. Drink lots of hot, because they said drink hot drinks and stuff like that. But I'd say she was going home going, thank God that one's gone back to Ireland, because I couldn't handle that. And it's probably a good thing that there was distance as well, mm-hmm, that she could be herself, you know, and do her own things without someone, a watchful eye constantly going, I saw you out now this morning and you had no scarf on.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But no, that night even we went and different little things, you know, like for a coffee and different, we went back to the aquarium because there was not really much else to do in the place we were. And I was like, I think we'll just sit down now. I'm just a bit tired. And she was like, I'm not tired. Well, I am. And find a little bench. Want a cup of tea? You know.
More tea.
But no, I was. I was very, like, you know, and then in fairness to Tiffany, she knew, she'd always said to me, like, I know my own body. I know, she was really, and I didn't know really what she meant until the pregnancy, because she really is in tune and was in tune with her body. She knew this, I, you know, not that she could feel something, but she felt well. She felt, and I suppose it's a lot of positivity as well that she felt, that, no, I feel good. And then, like, she had to fly home afterwards. I was like, would you not drive? And George was like, it would take them like 5 days. Oh yeah, they could stop, have some tea somewhere, you know. But no, they flew, and I was like, should, and obviously medically she can fly, so, and didn't do her any harm. It was, everything was fine. So then you have to wait 10 days to do a HCG, the pregnancy hormone blood test, and it's a really good sign that the levels increase, and they monitor you a couple of days onwards as well from that to make sure they continue increasing if they see an increase in the first test. So of course, she did a pregnancy test, and she didn't tell me, and I was like, 10 days, really? Like, you're not going to see anything. So she messaged me one day. We were all at home, and she said, do you want to call? Do you want to Skype? And I said, yeah, no problem. I said, George isn't here. And she said, oh, it's fine. We'll do it later on then. And I was like, okay, fine. Maybe she just wants to talk, to, you know, to make sure that we're okay and she's okay. So this was like the night before the blood test. And so anyway, George got home from work and we Skyped, and she was there on the couch, and she said, I just have something to tell you. And I said, oh, what is it? Oh, no, what is it? Tell me quick. And she said, I did a pregnancy test. She said, and there's a positive. It's really faint, but it's positive. And I said, no, you didn't. And she said, yeah, it says it's positive. And I was like, okay. And I let myself just hope and be happy. So much of it was all, what if this happened? What if that happened? You know, and the risk of this and the percentage of this. And of course, you're dealing with all these professionals that love to tell you the percentages of everything. And there's very little kind of human contact in the middle of it. And I just said to George, like, oh, you don't get your hopes up. And I said, you know what? I'm never going to have this feeling of me in the bathroom with a pregnancy test and coming out to you and saying, ta-da. I said, so I am going to give myself this, and I'm going to be deliriously happy, even if it is for 24 hours. And I'm going to just be, let myself be happy, because we deserve it. So the blood test the next day confirmed that her HCG levels had increased, and they were really high. And so of course I googled, like, what does really high mean? They were like, it's good chance of, you know, pregnancy and the whole lot. So it's grand. So they went up again the next day. Then she had a really early, you had to wait then. So that's not a confirmed pregnancy on the books, on their books. So it's just a really good sign that the embryo has done what it's meant to do and it's implanted. So you wait then for 6 weeks for your, that's the earliest they can do an early scan. In these, I don't know, is there one you can do earlier? I don't know, but this is the earliest they could do at this stage. So of course George had to work, and he, you know, he'd taken so much time off, he just can't take anymore because we had our honeymoon and everything else. So I was in the kitchen at home on my own, and we had our appointment booked, and we had, Tiffany was going to Skype for it, for the first scan. So we were really nervous. It was like, she kept doing pregnancy tests and they were all positive, but you're like, you know, there could be an empty sac, it could be something else. We're just like, and I left, we didn't tell anyone about the positive test. We just told everyone we had to wait until the 6 week scan, and that's the first time we'd know. But secretly at home, we knew that there was really good positive things happening, but we were just, you know, like anyone would be in the first couple of weeks at home. You wouldn't go telling the whole world.
Yeah,
you just enjoy it yourself and go, like, I'll wait and I'll just make sure everything's okay before I start telling everyone. So we just did that, and we were kind of, you know, really hopeful. So anyway, in the ultrasound, Tiffany was there, I was at home on Skype, and her friend was there again with the phone holding up to the ultrasound monitor, I presume that's what you call it. Yeah. So I was looking, going, okay, I can see. And, you know, it starts off dark, and they kind of zoom in. So I was really trying hard to look on, like, you know, what can I see? What is that? So then I saw these, like, two little engagement rings, they look like. And I was like, well, what is that? Like, is that a placenta? I was, like, totally, like, stupid with all this. I was like, what is this? And then the nurse like, oh, we've got good news. And I was like, okay, great. There's a baby. Oh my God, this is good. She's happy. This is good. So she's like, oh, we've got more good news. And I was like, what's the more good news? But of course, like, the phone is over here. The nurse is over here with Tiffany. So that I couldn't hear properly. I could only see what was on the screen because she was way over the other side on a bigger screen. And obviously the nurse then typed in on the screen, twins.
Oh my God.
And I literally just sat there going, what? Twins? What? No. I said, but we only transferred one. And she's like, yeah, it's split. And I was like, oh my God. And she said, yeah. She's like, it's really early scan, but they're doing exactly what they should be doing. Well, I just...
jaw on the floor.
The tears came later, obviously happiness, but just jaw on the floor. It was just like, wow.
Had that even crossed your mind that that could happen?
No, because we knew we had one chance of doing all of this. You know, one chance of doing surrogacy, I mean, as a whole. And that's why we always wanted to transfer the two, because we were like, let's try for twins, because that's best case scenario. But then when they medically said that they wouldn't transfer two, we had to decide at that stage, would we keep Tiffany as a surrogate, or would we go and find somebody that would be allowed transfer to? But we had made such a connection to Tiffany, we said no, we love her to bits, we just can't see us settling and being happy with somebody else, so let's just be okay with transferring one. Which was hard, it was a hard decision, but we were like, it just, what it's meant to be will be. Like that moment when I saw the two on the screen and the nurse typed in twins, like,
never forget it.
Oh, never forget it. Never forget it. Totally ecstatic. So I rang. So, you know, and her friend handed Tiffany the phone and she said, like, I really got to pee, but you're never going to sleep again. She said, I'll FaceTime you later. She said, I have to go because, you know, it's full bladder and everything else. So we hung up really kind of quickly after that because she was rushing out and they had to, like, do a few other bits and pieces, and that was fine. So we obviously Skype later on, but I rang George in work, and I didn't just ring him, I FaceTimed him, and he was, you know, on a site or whatever else, and he was like, he kept hanging up on me. I was like, George,
why do they hang up on you at the worst times?
Like, I never FaceTime him. He's like, let's tell you were pressing the wrong button. It's like, I never FaceTime you in work. Hi, how's it going? Any news?
It's like, you're like, this happens to me with Jamie all the time. It's like, I'm not ringing you to ask you what you want for your dinner. Like, this is important.
This is important. Answer it. So anyway, he went outside wherever he was and he rang me back. Like, it felt like about an hour, but it was like 3 or 4 minutes later. And I said, yeah, so yeah, there's a baby. And he went, nah. I won't say what words he used, but oh, no way, oh my God, it's a baby, it worked, oh my God, oh my God. And I said, yeah, and it has a little buddy, there's two. And he was like, get lost. And I said, yeah. And he was like, oh my God. Like, he said, I can't come home. And I said, I know you can't come home. It's fine. Like, I'll see you later on. And like, and how's Tiffany? And was everything okay? And I said, yeah, everything's perfect. Everything is where it's meant to be. And everything is just perfect. And he was like, oh my God. And he was like high five and true, you know, FaceTime. Aww. Going, boom, we did it. Like, and it was just, we FaceTimed with Tiffany that night and she was like, oh my God, I'm going to be the size of a balloon, you know, all this. And she's like, look, I am going to be just the best I can be on a pregnancy. Obviously, a twin pregnancy is higher risk. But she said, like, I got this, you know, you're good. I'm going to mind myself. I'm going to do what I need to do and the whole lot. So the pregnancy just went perfectly.
And you, this may sound crazy, but I'm sure everyone thinks this. Like, are you scared that she's going to disappear?
No.
Because you're so in it with much trust.
Because we had spoke, it wasn't a thing that, you know, we had met and then transfer was happening. We had so, like, this was June and we had been talking to her for 6 months. And that mightn't seem that long, but it was an intense 6 months. Like, we had FaceTimed Like I had went, my brother was living in Nice at the time, and I had went to Nice for a week, just sun, just because, just, you know, it's good for the bones, you know. And we had FaceTimed there, I think it like lasted like 3 or 4 hours, just talking about like secondary school and primary school, and just really, it was like a really intense friendship that we just got to know her so well.
That's so lovely, isn't it? That
it
you
is.
Didn't have those doubts.
No, and I really didn't. And she was, and she had said to us afterwards, "Oh no, I'm never going to disappear with twins. No, not a hope." She said, "I know what that means. I've had two kids."
See, that's the thing that's great when I think, and I think I'm not sure. I think in Ukraine, your surrogate has had to have a child already.
In the States, it's the same. And in Canada, it's the same.
So they know how hard it is. So they're not going to run off with a child that isn't their own.
I definitely don't want twins. Yeah. You know, but no, I didn't have the doubt. I knew because we had got to know her so well, and we had put the effort into our friendship. And I think it definitely paid off through the pregnancy, and it paid off now, you know.
So the pregnancy went really well.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Tell me about the day when your twins arrived into the world.
So we had been there for the 20-week scan, and we'd found out that we were having two boys. So we had known this already, and we had brought over the baby bag and done the whole nesting thing there and everything else, and left everything in case we didn't get back. But we did get back in time. It was a planned C-section. There was a few doubts beforehand. Would they arrive early? You know, they were big babies. And would she last to 37 and a half weeks or 37 weeks? So I had decided to go over on my own beforehand, just in case, to be there in case they did arrive early. And then George would follow me over at the time that we had planned to go over. Because, again, you can't take all the time off work, you know. So in the end, they stayed where they needed to stay. So the planned C-section at 37 and a half weeks was when they were born. So we went to the hospital. It was surreal. I remember driving down the road. It was in February, so there was plenty of snow around. It was really cold. Everyone was like freezing roads and everything. So we were driving. We had to meet in the hospital for 6 a.m. So we were going to meet Tiffany there because we were coming from two different directions. So we were driving down the road and I said, "George, this is just surreal. Like, we are going and the babies are going to be delivered. Like, how did this happen so quickly?" Like, it was amazing. And so we got to the hospital, and Tiffany's already been checked in and she's lying in the bed. And so we go in, and we'd already just decided beforehand again that I was going to be there for the birth because we had been there for the transfer together. So we were going to finish it as such, the two of us together. So her husband and my husband, George, were going to be in the room beside us, and we were going to be in theatre together. So we were making sure she was okay. She's like, "Yeah." She's like, you know, at this stage, she was really pregnant with twins and they were big, and she was really feeling the effects of it. And I said, "Look, you know, you're amazing. Everything's going to be fine." And she said, "Yeah." She said, she was scared. Of course, it was her first surgery as well. Like, she was scared of the surgery and she was scared of afterwards and everything else. So we were kind of spent, you know, say an hour or whatever, just talking to her and just like talking with the babies and what were they going to look like and, you know, are they going to be okay and everything else. So Tiffany was brought into the delivery room first, and then I had to put on the scrubs and the whole lot and then go in afterwards when she was ready. And like when they were ready to be born, I was going to go in. So they came in anyway for me and they said, "Right, we're ready to go." I was like, "Right, I'm going in." And George's like, "Then go." And I was like, "I'm going." And he's like, "You need to move." I was like, "Oh God, okay." So I just followed the nurse in.
And how did you, was your heart racing?
Yeah, my heart was racing. So they put a mask on me and I was there and Tiffany was there and she was all, you know, cannulas and the whole lot. And I said, "Are you okay?" And she's like, "Yeah." She's like, "This is like really..." So we had a moment together that was just like, we were like shifted into a different room or something. It was just, we had a moment, just the two of us, and we just spoke about how amazing this was and how amazing she was, and this was just the best gift that anyone could ever give. And I just thanked her. I was like, I feel weird saying thank you, but like, thank you. I said, "I don't think I ever said that in anything." And she said, no, I know. And she said, this is going to be amazing. So then a nurse said to me, "Do you want to stand up to see them being born?" And I said, I don't know. I don't think so. So she grabbed me by my elbow and pulled me up. And she later on said, you were going to regret that because you were, yeah, I'm getting up. No, I'm getting back. You didn't know what you wanted. So she said, I just pulled you up. So I was standing there. I was holding Tiffany's hand. She was obviously, there was a screen between her and her belly. And there was two doctors. There was two teams for each baby. It was a team for each baby. So the room was packed. In the corner, there was about 7 or 8 students. It was a small enough theatre, but there was people everywhere. So I was like, where do I look? And, you know, who's going to deliver a baby first? Because there was a doctor for each baby. So I was just standing there and I was like, I could feel, you know what I mean? You feel yourself shake, but you're kind of going, I have nothing to hold. I just had to let it just go and just shake. So she was kind of steadying me, like standing up. So I was standing up and Dr. Jewel, our doctor, she delivered the first baby. So Theo came out first. He was baby A. And she held him up and I was like, oh my God. He was there. He was crying. He was there. He was a baby. And quick as a flash, he was just whipped away down to the warming bed, you know, to be looked after. And I was like, is he okay? Is he okay? And I can see it. And she was, everything's fine. And I was like, is he okay? And I could hear him cry. And I was like, oh, he's okay. And I was like, and then a minute later, Zach came out. And Dr. Thorne, amazing doctor, he delivered Zach. And I was like, what? And he didn't cry straight away. I panicked, like. And then he cried. He was fine. And I was like, there they are. And I said, Tiffany, I have to go down. And, you know, I didn't want to leave her. Mm. But I needed to go down to my babies. I just need to get down there to see them. And to hold their hands and make sure they're okay. It was the first time that I was going to be able to mind them. Do you know what I mean? You know, she had done everything else, but I needed... It was just that maternal instinct to get down there and make sure they're okay, make sure they're warm, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Silly things. So she was like, just go. So I gave her a kiss and I went down and I was like, look at them. And I didn't know which way to go. So there are two warming beds. There's two of everything. And I was like, is he okay? So they had already cut Theo's cord, but they had left Zach's for me to do. And I was obviously shaking like this. So the nurse was like, don't cut my finger. I was like, I can't stop. And she's like, okay, she said, I want you to do this. She said, I'll steady your hand. So she steadied my hand and I cut his cords then. And it was just, from that moment on, it was just me, out of this world. So Theo was 5'12" and Zach was 6'7". They stayed about 3 or 4 days in the NICU for you know, a bit of fluid in the lungs, just small things. Mm. But they were little troopers.
And what was it like then? Did George come in?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So they were trying to, so Zach didn't pink up as quickly and stuff like that because he was the last out and whatever else. So they took Theo into the NICU. So I said, where are you bringing him? So they said, we're going to the NICU. Now, they had already explained all this to me beforehand and I just wanted to make sure. And I said, okay, can you get George in the next room? Just get George to go with you into the NICU. Because I didn't want them left on their own. I was just like, one of us has to be there constantly. So George said later on that he heard them cry when they were born. And I said,
oh my God.
And he's like, no, that couldn't be them. That's too quick. That's not them. But then he said, when he heard the second baby cry, he said, that's them. So he actually heard it. Do you know, he wasn't far removed from it as such. He heard them cry when they were being born. So he went down with Theo and he's been weighed and the whole lot and he was taking pictures and he was holding his little hand and saying, oh yeah, I'm your daddy and all this lovely stuff. And then I followed down then with Zach and the nurse when he had done what he was meant to do and he was fine. So we were both together in the NICU then. So Tiffany didn't get to see them for a couple of hours afterwards because she's obviously brought into recovery. So we had texted her to say, they're fine, we're in the NICU, we're going to see you in a few minutes. Get your rest, you know, but everything's okay. So they had a bit of fluid in their lungs again and they wanted to do like an x-ray to make sure that was all it was and everything else. So there was about an hour or two in the NICU that was like, kind of panic, going like, are they okay? Like, just tell me they're okay. The doctor came in and she just spoke so softly. I said, are you speaking softly because you think there's something wrong, you know? And she's like, this is just the way I speak. I was like, okay, I'm just panicking. And she said, don't panic. She said, this happens all the time. They're going to be fine. So we had a little miracle then with Zach. He wasn't getting his, they couldn't get the line in for the, for feeding and stuff like that. So they couldn't get the line in. And not for feeding. They couldn't get the line in for its fluids. And I flew down to my room and I got like a little holy pitcher and like my uncle's little mask card and stuff. And I came back up and I was like, I'm just putting something under the mattress. And they were like, you're not. This is a NICU. I said, I am. And I put it under the mattress. And I'm telling you, within seconds, the line went in. And he was thriving after that.
Wow.
So I was like, that's my little miracle. But then, so they were fine. Everything kind of turned around really quickly with them. They started feeding. We had the bottles and everything. We had everything there. And they started feeding. They were feeding really well. You know, like 5 mil, 10 mil, 15 mil. This is all like different days. Like it was kept going up and up. So then we... So Tiffany then, a couple of hours later, was in a wheelchair and she came in. And she just started... I saw her coming in the door and she started crying from the moment she came into the door into the incubators. But they were kind of unsettled for a day or two. And one of the nurses came in and said, why are those babies apart? They've always been together. Put them together. And I swear, they literally snooched around or whatever. They moved around in the thing, their nose touching.
Oh my God.
And they fell asleep.
Oh my God, stop.
I swear to God. They did. They were just beside each other.
Oh my God, what was that like to watch?
And I was like, look at them little wriggles and look at them moving. And all the nurses were like, oh my God, like that is so cute. Of course, we were taking pictures and the whole lot and sending them home and FaceTime sending them home. And I was like, this is unbelievable. Like, and even now, they'll always be touching each other. They'll always be, sometimes it's dragging out of back of t-shirts or something, but they'll always be near each other. Like they're sitting on two different chairs watching, say, a cartoon. One of them will get up and move and go over beside the other guy.
Wow.
You know? But no, we're totally blessed with everything.
Tell me about bringing them home to see your families.
So our flight was, we had a few flights to get home, and we were arriving at 5:30 in the morning at Dublin Airport. And so we were on the flight and we had the little beds for them. They have little cots things that they can go into, and they slept there. Of course, babies, they were exactly 2 weeks old when we flew home. They just slept and they ate and they got their nappies changed and they were perfect. And I remember, you follow the flight on your screen on the plane, and I remember seeing, we're nearly going to land in an hour, and just the pressure and the relief literally lifted off your shoulders coming into land, seeing, like, it was dark, so seeing the lights of Dublin Airport and just coming in going, and I was, and you know, I had changed them, my mum had bought two little airport outfits for them.
Oh.
With little airplanes and little hats.
Oh my
so
God.
I had put them on them coming in, and before we came to land, and I was like, well boys, you're home. And I was just like, it was a relief, and it was just so lovely to see everyone, you know. Both our families were at the airport, and my sister actually videoed us coming in. Bags everywhere, two baby seats, two babies, and we came around, and it was amazing. It was so emotional, and it was amazing to be home, and it was just a relief, and it was like, now the fun starts, you know. It was like, this is our lives now. And like, I don't think, like, they just fitted into everyone's lives. It was like, there's the boys, you know, there's nothing different about them to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, you know, my mom would have been coming up every day to the house, you know, what can I do? You know, wash bottles. And there was nothing unnatural about it. It was just, we had brought our babies home. It was just that we brought them home on a plane from America. It wasn't anything different. Do you know, I didn't feel any different than an average person bringing their baby home from a hospital.
And what, since then, Tiffany has has visited you guys.
Yeah. So the last time she saw them was 2 weeks. They were 2 weeks old. So she came over about a month ago at this stage. And it was lovely. It was really nice. It was so nerve wracking, you know, because, you know, two toddlers, they're 2 and a half.
Yeah.
Will they, you know, will they cry? Will they make strange? I didn't want them to do that. But because we have always kept in contact, and they've always seen me talking to her, and, you know, we talk with her picture in the house, and we'd be talking about her, and she'd be on FaceTime, they kind of recognised her.
Mm.
And I had two balloons, because I thought, if I bring flowers for her to the airport, they're not going to give her flowers. Balloons they can play with in the crowd. As soon as we walked into the airport, one balloon was gone. There was a meltdown from the other one, from Zach. So they were fine, but it was, when I saw her, it was like a relief. Everything was like a relief of everything. It was like I had really genuinely missed her when we came home. Like when we were leaving America, coming home, I just felt that I shouldn't be leaving her there.
Yeah, because she was such a big part of the whole experience.
Massive part, and a really good friend as well. And I really genuinely missed her. It was like, if you go to the airport and you think, oh, I've forgotten something really important, I think I forgot my passport, I really need that with me, I need to go back and get it. It was like that when we were leaving. I was like, I really need to go back and bring Tiffany with us. It's not right for her to be there, or we need to stay there, or she needs to come with us. But, you know, as life with two babies then takes over, you know, you kind of get into the role of nappies and bottles and everything else. But we still kept in contact so much through all that, and send pictures and videos and everything else. But for her to actually come here and stay with us for a week, it was magical. It was lovely, and it was lovely for her to see the boys as they are now, you know, real little, turn into real little men, you know, with little words, and just being able to walk along holding hands with her and stuff. It was just lovely.
Oh my god, what an amazing story.
Yeah.
Like, you got your happy ever after.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You got your, like, family.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so happy for you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for telling your story on the Go Glow podcast.
I'm delighted to be here, yeah. Yeah, and I'm delighted to... And I think it's, you know, anyone that's going through anything, there is an end to it. You know, you can get some bit of normality back. There is an end to everything. You know, in the middle of hospital appointments, in the middle of... Like, I still go for 6-month scans. It's the most nerve-wracking thing, but there is an end to everything. This isn't going to be forever. Do you know, focus on the positive things and keep your positive family around you, positive friends around you, and, you know, just pray.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to the Go Glow podcast, with thanks to Fitbit. If you're enjoying this podcast, please hit the subscribe button and leave a review. For more on my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford.